Right, so hindsight's 2020. All right. So knowing what you know with the luxury of history after, you know, hey, I hired someone and maybe it didn't go so great. But looking back, what's the number one red flag in an interview?
Yeah, I think it's the I. You know, I mean, an interview is about you in a sense, but are they talking about others? Are they talking well about others? Yeah. Are they talking about the people that they've invested in? I think that is the biggest hindrance. And that's going to reveal a lot.
Welcome to another episode of the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. I am your host today, the Executive Director of Disciple First, Ben Borgman. And with me, as always, faithful, tried and true, but alone today, Craig Etheridge.
That's right, just you and me, face to face.
Face to face. You can't run, you can't hide. Nope. We're gonna expose everything.
That's right, here we go.
Right in the middle of it. So the important question, I haven't asked you in this while, how's your Cubs doing?
Oh, Ben, we don't want to talk about this right now. You know, there were seasons when it was good. There's a really bad stretch when it's bad. So I don't know. I don't know how we're going to end up. But yeah, we're not what we had hoped to be. That's okay. For sure.
But isn't that kind of the norm?
Well, you know, why are you bringing this up, Ben?
You know, keeping it light. Because, again, I mean, there's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide.
Nowhere to run. You know, they had a good time last year. You know, they got in the playoffs last year. They got to game five, got beat by the Brewers, you know. Drunkards. And, yeah, so they didn't advance beyond that. But this year there was a lot of hype, a lot of hope, a lot of excitement. You had Cabrera coming in. Yeah. You got Bregman coming on. I mean, and then the pitching fell apart, injuries. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden we can't hit the ball. We can't hit the ball
when's
for
the
like
All-Star
a month.
Break? When's the All-Star break? It's coming up, huh?
Yeah, it's coming up in about a month.
You can reset right after that. There's always hope.
We need to reset terribly. Always hope. We need to get some new players.
All right. We'll be praying for you. We'll be praying. Can you pray for baseball, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're gonna have a conversation today. We're right in the middle of a three-episode kind of series, if you would, about real common challenges that we're really dealing with. Yeah. Churches about coaching. These are common things that, I mean, it comes up almost every church we're dealing with. So hopefully our listeners out there, they can glean something from this and be encouraged, and maybe it's something that they're dealing with and can just kind of take some of our lumps, you know, especially you. How long you been in ministry now, Craig?
Well, ministry, gosh, over 30 years.
30 years. And then are you coming up on an anniversary here?
Yeah, next year will be 20.
Oh, wow. So it's 19 this year and then 20 next
19
year.
19 this year, wow. 20, 20 next year. Yeah.
Okay, we ought to do something nice for you.
That's a big, just a handshake.
Yeah.
You know.
Get you a watch.
Yeah,
we'll get you a coupon.
Give me a Starbucks
gift
card.
Get you a coupon for a free Blizzard.
There you go. That'd be great. Yeah, I'd love that.
Anyway, but I say that because, again, you've probably taken a lot of lumps, especially what we're talking about today with hiring, staffing. You and I have had multiple personal conversations about, hey, what's the greatest challenge you face as a pastor and leader? And often you will say it's not us church members, but it's the...
Yeah, staff member.
Staff members. A lot of the frustrations and the things just... Again, like any business, I mean, I was in business for years before stepping into ministry, and man, it would be great if it wasn't for customers and employees. You know, business would be great. So, but it is that staffing is the main problem. You know, you think you have the right people on the team, and all of a sudden, problems come out, people get sideways, and you know, just like in business, ministry is really no different.
Right.
And you know, I want to talk specifically. There's a uniqueness of a disciple making church kind of context. That's
right.
What you're this culture that you've been cultivating here for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
And really what we're trying to encourage listeners to really, how do they develop in their context a disciple-making culture? Yeah. That creates another problem with regards to staffing because it's, you know, you hate to say this, how you would think that everybody that loves Jesus would be a good fit for a disciple-making culture, and that's just not reality. And so that's really what I'm pressing today. If you're hiring someone and you're staffing, and how are you developing your team and building a team when things are expanding or people leave or move or whatever that happens, how do you find the right fit? Mm-hmm. That's what I want to talk about today.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And because again, it's not just competency. There's also these character issues, and in a, it's a right, and I do mean fit, I think is a good word, mm-hmm. because again, with the uniqueness of context, with the uniqueness of culture, there has to be great alignment with that person. But there, everybody likes to nod their head in an interview. I mean, hey, do you love the Great Commission? Are you passionate about investing your life? Or, you know, they'll nod all day long. But I'm wagering to bet over 20 years here at Cross Creek, there's been people that nodded in the interview that their life was really was saying something different. And that doesn't mean that they don't love Jesus. That just means, hey, what you're asking them to do to be a fit for this disciple-making culture and the type of leader you're looking for just may not, there may not be good alignment there.
Yes.
And so that's what we want to talk about today, and really just be able to not just plug a hole, because I think part of this conversation is there's a sense of urgency, you know, that people call it the tyranny of the urgent, mm-hmm. Where, hey, we have a need, we have a spot to fill, and there's this, okay, well, I'm just going to take this warm body and plug that hole. Yeah. And I think we have to, as leaders, you have to step back from that, try to get ahead of that, and really hold the line of we have to find the right fit for this, not just any person will do.
Yes.
And so that's what I want to talk about today. You talk about it a lot in the disciple-making leader. So as a listener, you can go back and you could read, you know, look through that. This, we talk a lot about leadership pipeline, how to foster leaders, but you highlight a type of leader that sometimes we have, you know, kind of a fit issue, and that's an L2 leader.
Yes.
Or a superstar leader.
Right.
So what's an L2 leader?
Yeah, you know, these L2 guys are so attractive. You know, they are so attractive and so easily, you know, motivating for you to want to hire them because they are really great at what they do. You know, that when we talk about L2 person, really what we're, you kind of have to see the chart for the L1-2 to make sense. But really an L1 is kind of the optimal track. And this is somebody who has moved down the spiritual growth pathway. They've explored, they've crossed the faith line, they've connected well, they've been discipled, or they've grown in their faith intentionally, and now they're multiplying others. And so as they go down that pathway, you want to see them starting to move up in the pipeline.
Yeah.
So that the end result is that when you get somebody that's an organizational leader at the top of the organizational chart, they're actually people that are multiplying their life.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
The multiplication mindset.
Yeah, they're a discipling, multiplying person.
Yep. Everything through that lens.
And so that's what you want. But there are some people that they obviously explored, they crossed the faith line, they connected well in the church, and then they just zipped up the org chart, so to speak, right? They zipped up the pipeline, leadership pipeline. They became a team lead and then a leader of leaders, and then they quickly moved into a divisional leader and then maybe even an organizational leader. And it, primarily because they're saved, they're in the church, it doesn't mean they're not, don't love Jesus, yeah. but they're talented. And they're skillful, and they're good communicators, and they're good with people, and they've got a great personality, and they're hardworking, and all of these things. And so they zip up to the highest levels of leadership, but they've never really been discipled.
Yeah.
And they certainly haven't multiplied their life in that regard.
Yeah.
And so when they get to that level, what you have is someone who's really good at what they do, but they are not a disciple maker, and they're not multiplying their life.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is, of course, they're never going to lead the church to do that if they're not modeling it. Yeah. And so it doesn't mean they can't. They, you know, we talk bending that person. We just basically move them down the pathway a little bit more. But that takes humility on their part. That takes them to realize, hey, I want to grow. Hey, I want to get better at this. And they have to be willing to do that. And what I found is that you have guys that are L2s, or these guys that are very talented, very gifted, they're in these positions, and they just don't think they need to do that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they're just, you know, it is pride, but, you know, it is, we don't like to call it that. But that's what it was. I'm just not teachable. I just don't feel like I need that. I've been very successful where I was doing what I do, and I can produce at a certain level that shows success, but not really multiply my life. And the real danger, Ben, is that your job then becomes something you do that is performance-based, but your life is really different than that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always mean that you're living a double life of sin.
A lot of, most L2 leaders love Jesus.
Right.
It's not.
But it means that, you know, I perform this work, I do this, this is what got me to this position, but I'm not really living out as a disciple maker in my own personal life. I'm certainly not investing in other people to do that, and I'm not multiplying my life. Sometimes a superstar, that's what I call the superstar, you know, he kind of feels like, hey, I'm the secret sauce. You know, you should be glad to have me on your staff, yeah. You know, because I can do this and I can do that, you know. But they're not leaving anybody developed behind them. And if they're really good, then they'll bounce from you to the next highest church, and they're going to leave a great void because they didn't disciple, invest, or develop anyone around them.
Yeah.
So they're very attractive. You know, I'm telling you, I can say that because I've done my share of chasing guys like that. And I think as a culture, right, we have kind of a celebrity mindset. You know, we're attracted to celebrities and super. I'd be talking about my Cubs. You know, we chase after the celebrity, but you know, celebrities can't always get you where you need them to go.
Yeah.
And so in a church world, we have to look at, are these people internally disciple makers? Are they internally developers?
Yeah.
And are they going to be developing? Is that something they do naturally out of conviction, out of their own heart? Or is it something that they're going to kind of begrudgingly do because you asked them to do it?
Yeah. And I do think that the idea of a multiplication mindset, developer, again, we're speaking about the right fit in a specific cultural context of a disciple-making church.
That's right.
Your expectation for those leaders is to be developers and to be multipliers and to invest their life, not as a part of their job. And so if it's not a right fit, there's going to be constant conflict. This isn't throwing shade at anybody. It's just like, hey, you're just not a great fit for here. But I do want to, again, it's just me and you, so I can call you out right now.
Yeah,
so I do want to say, I want to expose you to the world.
Oh, fantastic.
At one point in time, you yourself were an attractive, talented, great communicating L2 leader, weren't you?
I was. My first church. I mean, that's what I was.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful, though, that, you know, even before I got to be a senior pastor role, I was already thinking about disciple making. You know, I was searching that out. I was actually a discipleship pastor at a larger church. And so I was working on it. I was thinking about it, right? But I didn't have a full understanding of what that meant back then. I just thought discipleship, which I use that term, I don't use that now, was more about just taking people through various curriculum, right?
Yeah.
But then I had three businessmen in my church that loved me and called me to hire and invested in my life, and I was willing to do it. You know, as a senior pastor, I was willing to say, teach me, show me, what does that look like? And, you know, I had a hungry, teachable spirit, and I saw these guys were older than me, very successful, bearing a lot of fruit, and I wanted to learn from them. And they kind of moved me down the pathway as a senior pastor, and it allowed me to get to a point where that became the DNA of my heart, and I could set the pace for the church. I don't think they were doing that necessarily intentionally, but as I look back, that's what was happening. And I've also hired some guys that were really good L2s that did have this coachable, teachable spirit, and then went on to be very, very fruitful.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it just kind of depends on if you have that L2 person, you know, can they really be coachable to grow?
Yeah. So all that to be said, I just wanted to kind of set the stage for, but when we are hiring within a disciple-making culture, how do we help ourselves out and try to find a right fit? Just a few ways to do that. Number one, I do, you know, this is a part of our coaching series. Just tell the listeners right now, how do you reach out for help in this? Because I really want to normalize this idea of pastors reaching out to other people for help. It doesn't have to be disciple first coaching. We're here to help and we're here to serve. But like, I do feel and observe that there's a pressure of a pastor to just figure everything out on their own.
Yeah.
And I don't think that has to be the case.
No.
So how have you done that, reached out to other people, maybe intern inside the church, maybe consultants with the realm of staffing?
Well, this is very timely because we're searching for a position right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very prominent position on the platform. And it's not someone that we have internally at this point. So I'm living this out right now, in real time. And I will say that there are a couple of ways that I've asked for help. One is that we set hiring protocols. Like, how are we going to make a hire? What are the boxes we need to check in doing that? Now, we searched internally. We had some people that have HR experience, and so we talked with them. We worked with our personnel team to develop, here are the boxes we need to check. Yeah. What are the things we need to be sure to look at? Who's going to do the interview? Who has the power to hire and not? You know, what background checks are we going to do? What tools are we going to use in evaluating a person? All that was laid out beforehand. So I think that that's good to, even if you're not searching, that's probably the best time to develop something like this, because it's not like I'm trying to rush to get an end done. But if you have a protocol in place, it just makes the hiring process much simpler and less frantic, because, okay, I pull out the sheet of paper and I start going through. Every pilot has checklists. They live and die by the checklist. And so if you have a checklist of, here's the steps we do to hire someone, then you make sure that you don't skip any of them, because all of them will be important. Yeah. So I asked help to develop that hiring protocol. Another thing we did was we use an organization called Culture Index, which is basically like a personality inventory, even though they would probably cringe at that evaluation, but it measures how a person works in a work environment.
Yeah, specifically for that role.
Right, and for their role. Job. So you can customize the kind of profile you're looking for a particular role, and then we'll match candidates up against that, say, yes, this is 50% a match or not, or yes. And then that kind of helps narrow the field a little bit for us. We know we're kind of talking at least to the right kind of person for this job, other than their resume and experience and so on. And so that's helpful. That's an outside source. And so we use that regularly. We've been using that for a long time, and it's been very helpful for us. And honestly, we found that people pretty much are spot on to their profile that is evaluated or revealed in the Culture Index. And so that's helpful. We kind of know how they're going to respond in certain situations. Are they move fast? Or they move slow? Are they very relational? Are they very technical? Are they people-oriented or task-oriented? Are they independent thinkers? Or do they like to follow a proven plan? These kinds of things are very helpful when you go to hiring a certain person. Yeah. And if you have the Culture Indexes, they like to blaze trails on their own, but you wanted to run the playbook that you have, well, you're going to have frustration.
Oh, yeah.
But if you want to create something new, and then that's the perfect kind of person. Yep. So what we found is sometimes, you know, we just had the person in the wrong spot because we really didn't need them to blaze a trail. We needed to work the plan that we already had in place. So Culture Index is another outside source that we consult with. But then on top of that, I think that, you know, we will work with certain consultants. For example, if we're looking for a youth pastor, we may network with a boutique guy, or it may be a service. There are plenty of them out there. I'm not sponsoring any of them, so I'm not giving them any time. But certain services that will go out and search for a youth pastor for you. And they'll listen to all the details that you need and what you want, and they'll try to make a good fit for that. So I think that's helpful too. In fact, in the position we're looking for here, it's not the youth guy, but in another role, we found a guy in our area that is very networked in this, and he's kind of helping us create a potential candidate list. Yeah. And we spent an hour and a half to 2 hours in great detail going over what we would expect from this guy.
Yeah.
And you can guess what he heard. Disciple maker, developer, multiplier. Yeah. You know, we're not looking for just a suit. Yeah, he's got to be able to do his job really well.
Yeah.
But that's not the only thing. He's got to do all these things too. Yeah. And so if you got a guy that doesn't want to do that, or can't invest in other people, or can't multiply himself, that he's not going to be a good fit here. Yeah. We're going to be frustrated, and he's going to be frustrated. But if he loves to do that, he's going to think this is a kid in a candy store, because there's going to be a lot of encouragement to do that.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, hiring protocols, Culture Index, working with consultants, you know, these are all great resources that we tap into when we're looking at hiring someone from the outside.
Yeah.
And I'll just say it's the greatest risk when you hire from the outside.
Yeah.
Because you really don't know what you're getting.
Yeah.
You don't know what you've got until you've already got them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's kind of enter at your own risk in that regard. Yeah. We prefer not to hire on the outside. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But most of the time, you're going to hit a spot where you need to.
Yeah.
You just don't have somebody with that gift set.
Yeah.
internally, or you had someone in place and then they moved and now you're caught short-handed. These things just happen. Yeah. So I think that's when you lean on some people outside to help you.
Yeah, for sure. And I think setting those protocols, all of this is really helping you push against the tyranny of the urgent. If, hey, I have a protocol, like you said, hey, I pull the sheet out and I start working the plan versus scrambling. It's just this idea of, I just see this picture of a pastor scrambling. We got to fill this role. We got to do this. Nope. We have a plan. We follow that. We've invited outside voices, from within the church, from outside the church. We've really worked on this. We have an intentional plan. We have expectations. And then we work the plan. So all of that really, again, as a listener, just keep the more you can do on the front end, instead of reactionary, will set you up for better things in the past, in the future.
I want to add one more thing here. Another way that we've asked for help is that even when you get into the interview process, I like to use certain people in our church to interview candidates. And here's the reason why, because churches typically do not have a high volume of people coming in.
Yeah.
You just don't
get like a business,
right? Where you have a large business and you're constantly interviewing, you may be interviewing 100 people or more, 200 people a year, and you're just constantly interviewing. Well, there, when you do that, you develop certain intuition and give you some insight into people that you like or don't like or good or not good. In a church, we often don't have that volume, and so it's always new every time, or it feels like it's new every time.
Well, it's a developed skill for sure, interviewing.
But you have people in your church that are skilled in this, and so I think that's someone you can come in. I talked to a guy this morning over breakfast, and he said he was trained by an FBI interviewer on how to interview. Wow. He interviews hundreds of people. I said, so what is the number one thing that you look for? He said, Craig, all I can say is there's just a discernment. I can tell pretty quickly right off the bat if this guy is going to be somebody I'm interested in. Just a level of discernment because I've just done it so many times. Yeah. And so pastors often don't get to develop that because they just don't have enough reps. So there are people in your church, though, I bet that they have got that they could sit in with you and you can draw from that. You can draw on their expertise in your process. And that's very helpful.
So let's talk about the interview. You brought that up. Let's talk about specifically, hey, when you are interviewing people from the outside, how do you, again, certain fit, cultural context, how do you get to the heart of that interviewee? And so I think, so number one, what I'm hearing is, hey, how do you get somebody with experience in the room? If you don't have that experience, if you feel uncomfortable, or even maybe you do a multi-layered interview, is a great way to really get to their true character. And I would say, just to the heart of that interviewer or interviewee. What other maybe tips or tricks have you learned the hard way maybe sometimes, but really getting past the immediate nod? Yeah, I love the Great Commission. I'm all about the Great Commission. How do you get, what are some, maybe some warning signs or some ways that you get to the heart of that in an interview?
Yeah, I think what you just said is really important. You got to have multiple layers of interviews with multiple eyes on a person. But I think probably for me, and to be quite candid, I don't know that I'm the best interviewer on our team. I've got some other guys that are really good at this, better than me. They would probably say that. But what I'm looking for is early on, younger Craig spent the interview time trying to convince them to come join our team.
Yeah.
Right. So I spent most of the time we do this and we do that and we do this, and I'm trying to sell them on coming to our church. And I've learned that is really not a good approach. Mm. That's not the time for me to try to sell them on coming here. This is the time for me to find out if they're a good fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they're not. Yeah. And so I think most of the time what I've learned to do, Shakespeare has a phrase that says your past is prologue, meaning what you did in the past is good indication as what you're going to do in the future.
Yeah.
So I would spend a lot more time talking about their past. Mm. Do they surface people that they've discipled personally without being prompted? What's the most rewarding thing in ministry? What are the things that you love that you're so thankful for? And do you hear development stuff like, man, I just invested this guy and he multiplied, or I took this guy on a mission trip, or I developed these people, these leaders, and they went on to do. Do I hear that kind of thing? Or do I just like, well, I just really like doing this and I really like doing that.
Or I produced this thing that everybody liked.
Right.
I did this event. This was the highlight of my ministry that I held this event.
Yeah.
And hundreds of people came.
Right, yeah. Which, you know, you're going to hear those things. And even unprompted. Because if you say, well, tell me about the people you develop, well, then they'll kind of scrounge for some, some idea about that. But if you can get them to talk without you leading the witness, so to speak, I think it will start to if you were to ask me, I'm going to talk, I'm going to bleed talking about investing in people, disciple making, church planting, multiplication. That's just what I'm going to talk about. And so they're going to, if they're a developer, they're going to talk about developing. If they're, you know, a disciple maker, they're going to talk about their personal investment in people. Yeah. And to me, that's what I'm listening for more than anything. So I think asking a lot of questions about what they've done, where they find joy, what takes up most of their time, what are their greatest frustrations, that's kind of thing. Yeah. I think also asking about their previous employment in other churches and don't just, you know, because if they'll say something like, well, I just had a terrible boss and I just couldn't work with him anymore, so I left. I used to go, oh, well, that's terrible. You had such a bad boss. You know, he probably is a terrible human being, you know. Now I'm realizing that guy probably was spot on and this guy is rubbing up against it for a reason. Yeah. There was conflict there for a reason. So I would just keep probing. Well, tell me more about that. What was it that he did that caused you? What caused that frustration? You know, the more you probe into those things, you can watch their body language. You can watch them react, and it's going to reveal a whole lot about that person.
All right, so hindsight's 20/20. All right, so knowing what you know with the luxury of history after, you know, hey, I hired someone and maybe it didn't go so great, but looking back, what's the number one red flag in an interview? You probably didn't recognize it in the moment. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, you may not have recognized it in the moment, but looking back, what's the number one red flag that our listeners and viewers should be watching out for?
Yeah, I think it's the I. Mm. You know, I mean, an interview is about you in a sense, but are they talking about others? Are they talking well about others?
Yeah.
Are they talking about the people that they've invested in? I think that is the biggest hindrance. And that's going to reveal a lot. As I look back over the people that did not work here, did not fit here, you know, I could probably now go back and I'm hearing their earlier interview comments from a different angle now because they carried a lot of hurt from past conflicts. They never were over those things and they just brought that into our environment. I think, you know, people that have a lot of drama around them, there's a reason why there's a lot of drama around them. People have a lot of conflict around them. There's a reason why they have a lot of conflict around them. People blame others always instead of, well, you know, I probably didn't handle that situation very well. I learned a lot from that. You know, those are things that I would look for, you know, because if they're articulating a lot of drama, a lot of conflict, always blame shifting to others, I guarantee you they're going to be saying that about you at some point down the line.
Yeah.
And so to me, that would be a big, big red flag. And let me just say, Ben, that there are sometimes when, you know, everything seems to be aligned.
Yeah.
And the way they talk, the way they communicated, and the job seems to be such a perfect fit. But when they get into it, there are other factors that are not a good fit. And you don't really know that in advance. You know, this is why we so desperately need the Holy Spirit to lead us.
For sure.
Because you just can't tell the future, you know? And so there are situations when it wasn't a character, maybe it was a character problem. Or we're going to get into some of these seven C's that we look at. But I think these are things you could ask questions around.
Yeah. So again, that kind of segues into, we've been talking a lot about what are the structures to help make sure it's a good fit. Again, there's no silver bullet in that. You're not just going to, foolproof way to do that when you're hiring from outside. And so you wrote in the Disciple Making Leader, you called it the seven C's, and not like vacation, not on a cruise ship, seven C's, the seven letter C's, because, you know, alliteration means it's from God, right? And so seven C's, these are character qualities, these are intrinsic qualities that you're looking for in an individual to maybe help you determine if they're a good fit. What are the seven C's?
So the first one is calling. can they articulate a call to ministry? You would be shocked at how many pastors can't really articulate a call to ministry. They just kind of roll into it and they start volunteering. And then somebody said, you'd be really good at this. And I went to Bible college and then I graduated from that and I started it. But, you know, how did God actually say this is what you're supposed to do? Yeah. And I think there should be some questions around that. Mm-hmm. You know, can you articulate a clear call? Number two is character, you know, character questions. You're going to ascertain character probably from references and references from references, mm-hmm. you know, as to that. But is this person a high character person? And in a lot of, you know, how did you deal with the person that mistreated you? Yeah. How did you deal with a conflict that you had? You know, that's where character really comes out.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would say you dig around the sensitive areas of their ministry and the character will start to flow. You know, if they get flushed in the face and, you know, or whatever, you know, you could tell that, you know, that's still, oh, I just hit on a nerve that was really sensitive. And so character is huge, you know, faithfulness to their wife, faithfulness to their spouse, you know. You know, the majority of qualifications listed in 1 Timothy for spiritual leadership are all character.
Yeah.
You know, what's their reputation like, or how do they handle themselves? Yeah,
what's their family
like? Yeah, and so I think that there should be a lot of questions wrapped around there. Competencies, you know, are they competent? Do they have the competencies necessary for the job? And competencies, I always thought, let's go back to youth pastor illustration. Are they good with kids? Do they attract kids? Do they have a good, they know how to run a camp. You know, they know how to run a Sunday morning. Those are certainly levels of competency. But another level of competency has to do with how they lead.
Yeah.
Tell me about how you lead your meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, tell me about the agenda that you have. How do you do planning?
Yeah.
You know, how do you manage people? How do you oversee people? Yeah. What problems have you had in that area? What areas do you not think you're very good at?
Yeah.
That you'd like to get better at.
Yeah.
That's a whole level of competency that we often miss in an interview process, which is very big moving forward.
And I think that's a uniqueness, especially here at Cross Creek, but in a lot of disciple-making culture churches is I've heard it described. We were talking with a staff development person that you're kind of working with on how to just really develop staff well. And she described it as the two sides of the coin, leadership and management.
That's right.
And so how are you a good leader? You can't just be a good visionary leader and, hey, we're going to go this way without being a great manager of people, shepherding. Mm. So you have this visionary leader shepherd, and that's a distinctive here.
Right.
If you don't have both sides of those developed, you're probably not going to be a good fit in specific roles, like you're saying.
No doubt.
If you're not able to shepherd people well and you're only that visionary leader, then there's going to be problems and not going to be a good fit.
Yeah. So I would say competency in that as well as the skill of what they need to do their job.
Sure.
Capacity is a big one too. And this is often hard to ascertain in an interview process, but there's some people that, you know, they're a small plate person and there's some people that are big plate persons. Yeah. You know, when I think about Moses and Jethro, remember Jethro said, Moses, you can't do this all by yourself. You know, set aside guys that are 50s, 100s, you know, thousands that they can oversee. Well, the 1,000 guys had just bigger capacity than a 50 guy. And it doesn't mean that they're bad. You need good 50 guys, you need good 1,000 guys, you know, but what is their level of capacity? And I think that's worth trying to ask questions about that, you know, because they may be stepping into a church that's much larger than what they came from. Do they have the capacity for that? Or the breadth of ministry, or maybe they're going to be having to spin multiple plates. It's not just size, but it's about the capacity to manage multiple things at one time.
Yeah.
And that not only is important to the interviewee, but also to the people that are their references. Can they handle multiple things? Have you seen them getting frustrated when these things happen?
Yeah.
That's really, really big. Yeah. Talk to somebody they managed. Hey, is there somebody that you've managed that I could talk to?
Yeah.
That will be highly enlightening. Core values is pretty straightforward. Hopefully your church has core values that you say, this is what we value and important, whether those are cultural statements or value statements. I think that articulating very clearly to them what the value is. And when I've done this well, what I've done is said, okay, here's a value. Let's say we have a value of treating each other with honor. mm-hmm. let's just say we have, that is a value, then what you would want to do is, oh, yeah, I'm good. I'm trying to. Well, let me tell you what, when you don't do this, this is what it looks like. Mm-hmm. This is what it looks like to violate this.
Yeah.
If you get mad and slam the door in a meeting because you didn't like what happened, that would be dishonoring.
Yeah.
That would not fly here.
Yeah.
But honoring someone, this is what it would look like. And you try to paint bright lines of this is what it looks to violate it, mm-hmm. and this is what it looks like to do this right. I mean, saying that super clear, yeah. if you did this, you would not last here.
Yeah.
I mean, that actually, you think, well, that's going to run people off. Actually, it makes people feel really safe, you yeah. know, that I'm not going to have to deal with that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, then that means that's not going to be tolerated here. And that's actually a good thing. That creates safety on your team.
Yeah.
So I think when you get to values, not just, oh, I agree, but here's what it looks like to violate it. Here's what it looks like to embody it. Mm-hmm. And if you violated it, you know, this would not, you would not last here very long
yeah.
doing that. Chemistry, obviously this is important when you get into multiple layers of the interview process. Do you just like them? You know, do you like being around them? Mm-hmm. You know, some people are really high on chemistry. They're super likable, but their competency is lacking,
yeah.
you know, so you have to look at all these in a balance, but chemistry, how do they fit on your team? Would they fit good? You know, if you've got a lot of guys on your team that are into sports or they're athletes, you know, are they going to fit well with these guys? Or you have a lot of creatives, are they going to fit well? Or we got a bunch of hunters and fishers. Are they going to, mm-hmm. if they're a city boy, are they going to fit with it? you know what I'm saying? You know the unique culture of your team. And so do you feel like they're going to be a good fit?
Yeah.
I've known some guys that'll take them out and, you know, make them, you know, do stuff with the team just to see how they interact with. And I think that's a good thing. Get them out of the building, you know, and do something fun together and just, you know, see how you interact. Is everybody like being around them?
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is just commitment. You know, are they committed to the mission? Are they committed to, or do they stay with their commitments?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they, I mean, I'd look if they were at a church every year and a half, you know, over the last 7 years,
yeah.
something clearly is not right.
It's off.
So, you know, are they a person that keeps their commitments? Would they be committed to the direction you're going?
Yeah.
If you clearly know where you're going, that's helpful. You know, if you don't clearly,
if you don't know where that is.
Yeah, if you can't articulate problem. This is where we're going. Like for us right now, we have a very clear plan till 2033.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear.
Yeah.
If you're not committed, if that doesn't fire you up, well then you're going to be miserable here because this is all we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
But if you're like, oh my gosh, I get to do that and get paid for it. Heck yeah, sign me up. I'd do that for free. Well, then that's the kind of guy that you're looking for. So I think, Ben, when you look at all these, I think these seven C's help you to populate questions in the interview process. So if you're like, well, I'm not really sure what to ask, right? Well, these just, you can make a list of questions under each one of these, and that gives you great conversation starters for interview, and then just praying for discernment, having multiple eyes on it, help you to make the best hire possible.
Yeah, and I think all of those together create this intentionality, creates this grid of protection.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you able to do that in a great way to be able to protect yourself and make sure that it's right fit?
Yeah.
In a perfect world, though, if the world was perfect in a disciple-making culture, the best way is to raise up leaders from within.
That's right. That's exactly right.
They've been a part of your culture. They've done that. And again, the challenge is they're just get out in front of it that far. And especially like, you know, here at Cross Creek, we are developing, we are expanding, God is giving us favor in certain areas. So it's hard to keep up with that with the time it takes to really develop a leader and develop a person spiritually and with capacity. But, you know, what I would say, you know, there's a couple of things you guys are doing. Number one, we have the residency here now. That's part of this idea of how do we start to raise up people longer rather than just in an interview. And through a disciple-making movement here at the church, we've seen you're giving people, when you have a pipeline in place, you're giving people opportunity to serve and lead even as church members.
Right.
You're not calling them on staff and aren't necessarily at the beginning, but they're raising up, they're starting, and all of a sudden you start to see, oh, they have some of the things you talked about. Mm-hmm. You're able to see they have character, they have different competencies that you need. God is revealing a calling to them. And so, you know, some loose math here, don't quote me on this or don't fact check me, but about a third of your staff have been church members first or a resident. Like in the residency is what, in its third? So it's not like you've been running the residency for 10 years. Right. But your staff right now of 35 to 40 people is about a third of that is, hey, like I'm one of those. I was a church member here. I was in business. Again, part of the system, part asked to lead in certain levels. God developed a call, you know, called me out of business into ministry, join the team, help start Disciple First. We have multiple peoples like that. Keith is the same, like Disciple First, the whole team were business guys at the beginning.
Yeah, that's right.
Zach, me, and Keith.
Right.
And so none of those were interviewed and brought on because we were a great character fit. No, it was brought from within.
Right.
The challenge is, how do you do that at a pace? Because again, you can work towards that, but it's really hard. You can't necessarily create that. But I feel like you're doing a great job of how do you cultivate people within and creating these systems that are allowing people to emerge out of your leadership pipeline and creating space for them to come on staff where it's not like, oh, you're not, like, I don't have a seminary degree. Nobody ever said, oh, you can't come on staff here because you can't help with Disciple First because you don't have a seminary degree.
Right, right.
And so now, again, I get it. There are places and roles that may be a mm-hmm. requirement. But what I'm saying is this, it's a different culture and a different attitude to raise up within, from within. And so you have to kind of think a little bit differently too. What are you seeing as the benefit of that?
Yeah. Well, obviously the benefit is that you know what you're getting. You know, you generally know what you're getting because you've worked with this person, you've got relationship with them, you got relational capital. So the character issue, you already know. All these C's, you could pretty much know, hey, Ben is going to be a really good fit for this because we've seen his character, we've seen his capacity, we've seen a lot of a proven track record. And we know that he's going to be a good fit as far as philosophy of ministry, and he's going to invest his life because we've seen all that. So that's why raising within is so great, is because it removes a lot of the question marks of what are we really getting?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean that they always work out. It doesn't mean that, you know, there's not going to be conflict. I mean, there have been times we raised God from within and then it didn't work out, you know, for whatever reason. It really diminishes a lot of that gray question mark area that you just don't know when you're hiring from the outside. Yeah. Plus, they have immediate buy-in with the church family because they already know them, right? So they already trust them. They're super excited. Yeah. You know, it shortens the on-ramp. You know, when you bring on somebody new, it's going to take months for them just to earn credibility, for people to know them.
Yeah.
Whereas, man, it's like overnight, really, for a guy that's already in your church or a lady that's already in your church. So there's a lot of benefits to doing it that way. And that's what I would prefer. But the problem is not every church is big enough to always bring somebody on like that. And sometimes the job that you need requires a certain skill set that you just don't have anybody in your church to do that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking for a worship leader, where not everybody can do that. I mean, you got more than just play the guitar or whatever. You know, can you lead out? Can you do all that kind of thing? You might have somebody in your band that could move up to that, but maybe not. And so other roles may be more naturally able to move into somebody like that. Or you've got people that are very capable as leaders of leaders, but they just don't feel called to ministry.
Yeah.
Like professionally or vocationally.
Sure. Yeah.
And so there are a lot of reasons why you can't always do it that way. But I think that is definitely the preferred route.
Yeah.
So one of the ways you can kind of cue that up is that you really work at your leaders of leaders, right? So we talk about in South Making Leader, the five levels of the leadership pipeline. Mm-hmm. And that leaders of leaders is kind of that, we call it the growth, you know, margin there. It's really where the expansion joint, where you can actually pull volunteers into this role as high capacity volunteers overseeing multiple teams. And you can really see, do they have a call to ministry? Maybe God's going to bring that about when they serve at that level.
Yeah.
Or maybe you say, hey, this person, we really want to bring them on as a team. That's a natural growth area. So you can bring people up to that and see, you know, maybe God changes their heart. Maybe God calls them or maybe gives you some insight into what they could do. Yeah. So I think that's a big part of it. I think another thing is just regularly calling out people to vocational ministry. You know, we don't do that very well. And that's one thing that we wanted to get better at this next year is just talking about God is calling some of you to serve him full time.
Yeah.
just saying that, you know, back in the old days, you know, 40 years ago, you know, pastors talked about that a lot, you know, and ministry talked about that a lot. And I think we've hurt in the fact that we've kind of lost that language. So I think talking about what does it mean to be called to ministry, some God's calling some of you to ministry, just starts to get that in their heart and mind, you know, and acknowledging that. And then, of course, what we've done in response to, we don't really have as many as we would like, so we developed the residency. And I think residencies have begun to pop up in churches across the country. I'm super excited about it. Every residency is different. So just because XYZ Church has one and ABC Church has one, they're often really vastly different. And so I think it can, you can make it whatever you want to make it. You know, my point is that it's very, very fluid, and you can define residency however you want. But what we have done is we've promoted our residency as people coming out of college. So they have their bachelor's degree, but they feel called to vocational ministry. And so they can roll into a residency. And of course, there's a lot of scrutiny and how you get in, and there are a limited number of seats and all that kind of thing. But they really roll on our staff. They get paid as stipend. We provide housing for them, and it's a one-year residency. Yep. And we put them in areas of work in the ministry that they have an interest in. And we give them a lot of latitude to, you know, to develop and to lead and to be in front and to create. They're not interns. They're not just setting up chairs or, you know, going to fetch lunch, you know, for somebody. They're doing the work. And what we found is that that gives us a year trial run to say, we can see their character. Mm-hmm. We can see their work ethic. We can see their competency. We can see all these things. And we disciple them while they're here. We see who's catching it, who's not catching it. Who's passionate, who's not. And then many of those we've rolled into staff positions. And it's been very helpful because, again, we kind of know what we were getting. And they kind of know what they're getting, too, when they come on. Now, again, not all of them work out, and that's, you know, that's just people. But though that was one new thing we did to say, hey, we can't just keep putting things on, you know, ministrystaff.com. We cannot just make that our primary way that we hire people. You know, we've got to do a better job of raising people internally, bringing in residents that are kind of internal, right? They're external, but they're with us for a year, and then external. So you kind of got those three categories that we're working through to try to find the best person for the job.
I think, you know, kind of tying a bow on this one, what I'm hearing is we got to get away from just that tyranny of the urgent and just plugging a hole and creating, I think of it like a runway. So again, the runway for an interview is a lot shorter than a runway for developing a disciple maker like me, right? That was over the course of 5-6 years before I went into vocational ministry where you were able to see. So that's a long runway. But I think in any case, think about, as a viewer and listener, think about how do you extend that runway, whichever one you're having to do, and get away from just plugging the hole? So how do you put those protocols in place? How do you get more eyes? How do you have a better standard of hiring? That, to me, that's creating a runway. Then the residency, a little bit longer runway. Now you can think about it like a one-year interview in action. You know, really, you're seeing them, how they deal with that. Like I said, do they slam a door when they get angry? Do they? You're seeing all that real time. And then the longest runway of a disciple maker or a leader within your church. And so to me, that's where I go back. Oh, let's boil this down. Just create runway, like create a longer runway, however longer, because the more eyes, the more time. Time is your friend when it comes to hiring. People reveal themselves over time.
And I will add to that, Ben, that the best time to do that is when you're not, you know, in the middle of it. And so if you have a personnel team or you have a board of elders or whatever structure you have, that should be conversations you're having now. Not when you need it. And then you say, well, Pastor, why aren't we coming up with the hiring? We're not hiring anybody yet. That's right. We want to get it all nailed down now. Really thought through, prayed through, so that when the time comes, we're ready to go. And that not only has to do with when you bring staff on, but also when you take staff off, or when you onboard them, and when you offboard them, what are you going to do then too? And so just having all that, it helps you sleep at night a little bit better, because you at least have a plan. And I found that, you know, the Lord's been really faithful to, we develop a lot of these plans in advance, just kind of in a sense of just being healthy, not an immediate situation, and then we turn around and we need that.
Yeah.
And God knows that. And so just forethought, that's what you should be really talking about in those meetings, those personnel meetings, is, you know, how do we do this well? What's our policy for this? How are we going to develop it? What do we do if somebody has a conflict? How do we handle? You know, lay all these guidelines out so that then they will help you actually manage the ministry.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your insight and sharing just, again, some of your lumps that you've taken along the way over your 20 years of ministry or 20 years of ministry here. And so you as a listener, a viewer, just thank you so much for listening. I want you to just keep in mind, if you're dealing with this idea of hiring or you want to develop a new process for this and need a new set of eyes, go to disciplefirst.com/coaching and you can schedule a free evaluation call. We can take a look at what you're dealing with and your challenges. And really, we would love to help you develop a holistic leadership development system or maybe a hiring process. We can take a look at that with you and our team of coaches. Or if maybe you had questions about the residency that we talked about, we'll also have links for all these things in our show notes. As always, we're here to help and we're here to serve you. Thanks for watching.